And good morning. Welcome to the Friday edition of the North Idaho News of the Week. This is a comparatively new show for us here on KRFY, where we're going through the top local stories of the past 7 days. We're doing that each Friday at 8 a.m. And thank you for tuning in. I'm today's host, or at least the guy on the soundboard here, Chris Bessler. And I'm joined today by the editor of the Sandpoint Reader, Zach Hagedorn. Zach, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
And we have a lot of things to talk about, as usual. I'd say the story that really dominated the week was the things going on at the West Bonner County School District. There was a recall election. There were a couple of attempts to have meetings by the recalled trustees there. And actually, we're going to hear an interview with Darren Svahn. He's the Northern Bureau reporter for the Idaho Education News that Jack Peterson, one of our co-hosts here, he recorded it yesterday. We're going to listen to that in just a minute. And then Zach and I are going to come on with our pithy comments and
right.
about that whole series of events that happened over at the West Bonner County School District. Other things that happened this week around town that we will probably be able to work on a little bit of talk about is, well, we have elections coming up. There's an election filing deadline for the city that closes today. We'll tell you who's running for city election as of last night at 6 p.m. Former State Senator Jim Woodward announced he's running to reclaim his Legislative District 1 Senate seat. There's more wrangling over the Bonner County Fair. It's kind of good news for those of us that travel in town. North Boyer's reopened to traffic, and we'll touch on those things in a bit more. Zach, you want to throw anything in before we listen to this interview with Darren Svahn?
No, I'm excited to hear it.
Okay. Yeah, we... And, full disclosure, Zach and I both have not yet heard this interview, but this is an interview yesterday with the Northern Bureau reporter of the Idaho Education News conducted by Jack Peterson. It runs about 10 minutes, and we'll be back after this interview in order to talk some more about it.
And I guess I said good morning, but we'll say good afternoon, Darren, since that's what time it is when we're talking here today. Would you tell us a little bit about Idaho Education News and how long you've been a reporter covering the education beat?
Yeah, so Idaho Education News is based out of Boise, mm-hmm. and we have an office right near the Capitol. I'd say that we do a lot of focusing on making tracking the money, how it's spent from the legislature down to the districts and into the classrooms. So we spend a lot of time on that. And a lot of reporters like myself will get out into the classrooms and we'll actually do feature stories and kind of look at how that money is being spent and how it affects teachers and students. And I've been with them, I started last year. Previously, I was an English teacher, and I did that for quite a while, and I decided to come back to writing. And it's been quite an adventure and very interesting here in Idaho.
Yeah. You have spent your summer, for the most part, up here in North Idaho, not in Boise. Is that fair to say?
Not quite. Mm-hmm. I literally moved to Coeur d'Alene on Friday. Oh. I was covering all of the goings-on in West Bonner from Boise. I was doing a lot of help from the community, actually. The community has been great. They've helped me with photos, and they've live-streamed a lot of the meetings, so that they've been a real partner for me. We recognize that the news was growing, and the community in Northern Idaho really wanted us to do more. So we made the decision to open a Northern Bureau, and I moved on Friday while I was covering a story, and I was on the road with all my stuff in my truck. So it was an interesting day Friday, but I survived.
Yeah, well, it was a very interesting day up here. What a day to pick to move. So when last our listeners would have heard this, it was last Friday morning, and we were talking about what were then new election results had just come in that Tuesday, successfully recalling two members of the Board of Trustees of the West Bonner County School District. And we knew at that time that there had been a meeting scheduled for Friday night, but we did not know enough to say what was going to happen at that meeting. Can you tell us what became of that?
Well, to take a step back, after the election on Tuesday, I think myself and at least our newsroom We thought that might be not the end, but nearing the end of this, the drama and the the struggles they've had. I was reading and speaking with some of the community. I heard that that's not going to be the end. So I was a little surprised to learn that Friday they had scheduled this meeting, and it came quickly. They posted it just in enough time to meet the requirements. But the other trustees, the ones who are not part of the three voting bloc, they weren't even aware till the last minute. So yes, they put a number. It was one of the longer agendas I've seen them do in the last three months or so. It was quite long, and it had a lot of items. There was some typical things like hiring employees, but then there was a lot of information about contracts. There was even some agenda items about entering into legal action against the State Department, the State Board of Education. So those really concerned people in the community, and then the local attorney who's been active in this process, she got her lawsuit filed quickly enough and into the court system, which was able to bring an injunction against that meeting because of the items that were on the agenda. Her lawsuit wanted to stop them from signing contracts and entering into financial agreements that would burden the next board that's coming after the two trustees who've been recalled are replaced. She wanted to make sure that nothing was done that was going to encumber them, the next board that was coming along. So, yeah, they got it stopped at the last minute.
Hmm. Was there a motion to dissolve the board of directors as it exists, or was there an agenda item to dissolve the board of directors and reassemble it in some other formation to kind of sidestep the results of the recall election?
I think that was one of the major concerns of that community, because it was listed on the agenda as dissolving the board and then appointing the superintendent as being the person who's in charge of the board, and then a restructuring of the board. Now, what they exactly intended to do with those action items, I'm not certain of, because no one actually explained it to me even when I asked them. So the community had made assumptions, and rightly so, that something serious was about to happen. The board was going to be dissolved, and perhaps there was going to be some reorganization made by the superintendent. So that was definitely one of the driving forces that brought that lawsuit to stop that meeting.
And the injunction to stop the meeting came pretty close to the official time the meeting was supposed to kick off, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was, Education News, as I see it and anticipated it, I didn't really think it would be breaking news quite like this. But yes, I was monitoring it as I was traveling, and they were lining up about an hour before the meeting started. So the seats were pretty much full, and the community had, had their outreach, and they had a lot of people getting ready to show up. So everyone was anticipating the meeting to go forth as planned. And about 30 minutes before it was scheduled to start, one of the safety officers, a police officer that works there, he stepped in and let everyone know that the injunction had stopped it, and the restraining order was approved, and this meeting can't take place. And there was literally a round of cheering and applauding, and people felt pretty good about what had happened there. They were able to get that meeting stopped before something happened that they weren't really certain what that was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's still not the end of the story. Later on, as we speak, it sounds like just yesterday, there was another proposed meeting that didn't go through. Do you know anything else about that? That's about the extent of my knowledge of it.
Yes. I think coincidentally, as I came to North Idaho, one of my goals was to reach out to the superintendents in the various districts here. So that was my first thing, was to get out and visit Coeur d'Alene. And I was up in Priest River, and I was here in Sandpoint. Just visiting the schools and kind of seeing how things were getting started. So coincidentally, I was meeting with Superintendent Brandon Durst, and we sat down and talked about his expectations and some of the things that he was trying to accomplish for the school year. But at that very meeting, he mentioned that I should pay attention, because they're getting ready to post another agenda that night so that they could hold a meeting the next day. That was Tuesday when I was meeting with them. So obviously I was monitoring that. And the agenda did get posted just a little before 5, and it had 4 items on it. They seemed pretty innocuous, but according to the attorney who had filed the lawsuit successfully, some of those items dealt with contractual issues. They were going back and making some changes in minutes, perhaps. In any event, she wrote them a long email and outlined exactly what it is that she felt like they were defying in terms of that restraining order. And the meeting was canceled, I think, about 90 minutes before it was scheduled to start. I've never heard what exactly the reason was or what changed their minds, but they had definitely scheduled a second meeting. And then it was canceled about 90 minutes before it was scheduled to start.
Mm-hmm. And today, we're speaking on September 7th. The canvas is now complete? Or where are we in the this whole process of the recall election?
Yes, the two trustees, Keith Rutledge, who's the chairman, was the chairman, and Susan Brown, who is the vice chairman, they are no longer on the board. So technically, when the election on August 29th, the recall election was successful, they were still on the board technically all the way until today at 10 a.m. When your county commissioners met as the canvassing board, and they approved that canvass that was conducted by the clerk, Mike Rosedale. So officially at 10 a.m. today, they're no longer on the board. I've heard that some of their names have been removed from the district website. I can't confirm that. There were some people asking about, are they allowed in the building? I heard that, yes, they're allowed to get what they need, but they can no longer serve as a trustee and conduct any business. So now it's up to the three remaining trustees, Ms. Hall, Ms. Barton, and Mr. Reinbold. Those three trustees have 90 days to appoint 2 new trustees from those zones 2 and 4. I heard, and I can't say for sure, that they're accepting applications. I'm not sure exactly what that process is going to look like, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interest from the community to put their name in to perhaps serve on that board. And when they're appointed, they will serve out the term of the current trustees that were recalled, and I think that's going to go right up to the beginning of 2025. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I guess that's about the end of the story, because that brings us up to the present day. What do you think happens next?
What happens next? I think the three trustees who remain, who have a quorum, because there's 3 of them, I believe they're going to set a meeting and start the process, hold a special meeting, declare what needs to be done next, and then begin the process of selecting those new 2 trustees. Beyond that, I can't say. I'm going to stay on top of the story and interested to see what happens next and who gets selected. It's been an interesting ride so far. Not exactly what I thought I was going to do, but nevertheless, it's been interesting, and I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot in the process about local government, local control, the importance of elections. It's been eye-opening for me.
Yeah. Well, we'd be glad to have you back on sometime. Next time you're in Sandpoint or something, drop by the radio station. We can talk some more about what's going on more broadly, perhaps. But now I have to go back and let Chris and Zach talk about what else is going on today. They'll be hosting the show this morning. Darren Svahn from Idaho Education News, where can people find your coverage of this and other stories?
Well, you can just go into your web browser and type in idahoeducationnews.org, and you will have no problem finding it. We're quite a big publication, and we're growing. We have Carly, who works out of the East. She covers a lot of news there. We have 3 reporters that work out of Boise and, you know, track the Treasure Valley, and they're in the legislature, in the Capitol building quite a bit. And, of course, now I'm in North Idaho. So we're trying to get a little bit of information from all across the state. And if you have any tips or news ideas, please send them my way. My email is there, right there along with my stories.
Okay. Darren Svahn, Northern bureau reporter for the Idaho Education News. And now back to Chris in the studio.
And thank you, Jack and Darren, for that report. And again, this is Chris Bessler. I'm here in the studio with Zach Hagedon. Zach is the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. And Zach, Darren kind of went through all the stuff that happened last week.
Right.
What would you add to it? There's been a lot. This story has been of interest statewide.
I think it's gone even beyond statewide. I mean, I've seen some coverage even sort of like West Coast style. It's just such a dramatic thing that's been going on out there. And I think when Darren was speaking with Jack there, talking about the events on Friday the 1st, it's kind of hard to overstate how dramatic that was that day. You know, we'd all sort of gone to bed the night before thinking that the recall election had succeeded, that we were maybe past some of this sort of drama.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden on the 1st, you know, it's like, well, no, everybody has to rally the troops again. And, you know, the West Bonner sort of Priest River area community just got completely action or activated.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a reporter, just like Darren, you know, I mean, he was on the road. I pity him for that. But, I mean, at least I was sort of available.
At a desk with a computer.
Right. Yeah. But I was on the phone with everybody or email with everybody from, you know, city officials all the way up to, you know, emailing the Secretary of State, the Attorney General's office. And, you know, to a person, they were all just so concerned about what they saw happening there. And, you know, on or off the record, they were concerned about the legality of what the trustees were trying to do, considering the fact that we were in that kind of gray period between the recall election and then the canvassing of the results. And one of the things that kind of struck out at me, speaking with, you know, some folks connected with the state board and some other lawmaker types, was, even the, you know, county clerk, there was some confusion about exactly what a board or any legislative body is empowered to do if members have been recalled and before the canvass has made it official. So even the attorney out in Priest River, Katie Elsacer, she mentioned this to me as well, that there may be a need at the state level to look at some of the policies surrounding what officials are able to do legally after they've been recalled and before they've been canvassed, because it's not a lame duck. Situation.
No,
where
they're gone. In this case, they were lost by almost a 2-to-1 margin.
Right. I mean, it was like 63% or something. Yeah. But I mean, Idaho code has some somewhat vague language where it says, you know, the recall is effective when the results are proclaimed. Now, I guess a lay person might think, well, the results are proclaimed on election night when the results are proclaimed. But if you dig a little deeper into the code, it says, no, they're not really official until the canvass. So that gives you like a week. You know, between the election and the canvassing, where people could get away with all kinds of stuff, and they were trying to, and that was sort of the gist of that restraining order. And
that was last Friday that they tried to go into this special session, and there was a restraining order. But then they came back to try. They at least set it an agenda for another meeting, right?
Yeah, that one that was supposed to occur on the 6th, that kind of came out of nowhere too, and. Like Darren was saying in that interview, it dealt with, some tangentially contractually related items, such as, you know, affirming some previous board decisions that related to contract issues. So that was obviously played into a lot of the opposition to that meeting. Again, like Darren was saying, like, we don't know why exactly they decided to call it. I mean, I asked, you know, for comment from the trustees and from Brandon Durst, but I didn't hear anything back. However, I did run across a tweet from Brandon Durst on the 4th of September where he explicitly said unconstitutional court orders should be defied. So
he's decided that court order was unconstitutional.
So even before that meeting was announced, he had expressed his feelings that the court order that enjoined them from meeting on the 1st was unconstitutional. So that ahead of all that other drama seems to suggest that there was a plan in the works to intentionally defy the court order and have that meeting. Mm-hmm. Obviously that didn't work out, but yeah.
One thing about this story is there is a lot of things are speculative that we're talking about or writing about because the two recalled trustees, they're not talking to anybody. So we can guess at the motive for a special session, but we can't really know what they have intended.
No. And it's frustrating. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess, when it comes to some of these things. But one of the other kind of longer tail issues related to this that I find interesting is some of the analysis that's been coming out, you know, from some folks in southern Idaho and around the state, really. Jim Jones, who's a former Idaho Supreme Court justice, he was the attorney general of Idaho. He writes columns that get published around the state. And we reached out to him and asked if he would give us, you know, some of his analysis that we could print. And we did that this week. And his perspective on it is, you know, this is a an indication of kind of the broader strategy of some of the more extreme ultra-conservative right-wing groups to kind of take some of these jurisdictions, taxing districts, whatever they might be, school districts, and kind of fold them into their ideology. So his point here is like, look, I mean, we need to look beyond just West Bonner. I mean, we see it as a victory, but, you know, this is also indicative of a larger strategy, and other communities are probably going to have to face this, you know, in some way or another. And I find that interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. And you can read that entire column by the former Supreme Court Justice Jim Jones in the Reader this week. Well, we should probably talk about some other things because there was other news that kind of got overshadowed by all the drama out there in West Bonner. But there was a pretty important hearing on Wednesday about a proposed development at Trestle Creek by the Department of Lands. The Idaho Club has proposed 5 single-family estates in a private marina with 105 docks there. The project would entail some pretty heavy environmental changes, including rerouting Trestle Creek's North Branch and excavating an island and a peninsula and discharging, according to the Department of Lands, thousands of tons of soil and rock and debris into the lake. It's opposed by Idaho Conservation League and other groups, and that broke too late on Wednesday for it to get into either the Reader or the Bee. But what do you know about that?
Well, I know that we had a reporter there, so
she knows about it.
We will have a story in the next Reader. I know that the conservation groups are, you know, as they would be, pretty up in arms about this, pointing to issues such as like bull trout habitat, and just general overdevelopment of the sort of lakeshore. I mean, we have very little of our shoreline that has remained kind of undeveloped or untouched or whatever.
That's accessible to people.
That's accessible even, right. So there's that concern as well. The other side of it says, you know, this is not really that big of an impact. And in fact, I've heard some arguments from the developer side, you know, that doing some of this work will actually help the bull trout by putting them into a different stream sort of channel that's more in keeping with their traditional range. I don't know, how to assess that. I mean, that I'm sure that was discussed at the meeting.
Yeah.
But
we'll read more about
it. We will.
With Sanshree's story next week.
Maybe we'll get her in here.
Yeah, exactly. So other news, today is actually the filing deadline for candidates for open seats in city, school district, and special district elections. They have until 5 p.m. if they want to run for office. And that could be you, listener. If you want to run for office, you better hustle down and get the petition to get signed up. But that's for all the cities and special districts in Bonner County. As pertains to Sandpoint, the mayor seat is open, as well as the council seats held by Deb Rule, Andy Grote, and Kate McAllister. And as it turns out, none of those people are running for re-election to those seats. So we're going to see new faces everywhere. However, Kate McAllister, who is vacating her seat on the council, is running for mayor. And as of last night, there are two more folks that are running for mayor now. Jeremy Grimm and Fritz Moore have both filed for that. And as of last night, for the city council seats, there are now 4 candidates who have filed, and they are Amelia Boyd, Pam Duquette, Kyle Schreiber, and Ellie Sussness. In the Lake Pontre School District, there are 2 seats up for election. Those are the ones held by Pearly Decker for Zone 1, which covers Hope and Clark Fork, and then Geraldine Lewis in Zone 4, which covers Sagal. Lewis has announced that she's running for re-election, but we don't know any other candidates who have yet announced for those seats. And, it'll be a horse race now in the city of Sandpoint, because we have 3 people running for mayor, 4 at least running for council, and we may see some more candidates who file today before the 5 p.m. deadline. Any observation on that?
I think it's going to be one of the most interesting city elections we've had in a long time. I know that, you know, Kate, she's very well known around town. She's got a lot of connections to the chamber, her work on the city council, her, you know, she's an actress. So, I mean, she's a pretty strong contender for that. But Jeremy Grimm, you know, he used to be the city planner. He knows the city hall in and out. He knows all, I mean, he knows everything. Yeah. I mean, he was the guy, you know, for a long time. He also kind of comes from sort of a development consultancy background.
That's his current work now.
So he's got kind of multiple worlds in which he operates. Mm-hmm. So he's a strong contender, too. He can speak really strongly to policy. And
then we have Fritz Moore, who ran for council, I think just the last election, right? 2 years ago.
People, voters have seen him before on the ballot. He's kind of, he's the wild card in that race, I think.
You probably would recognize him if you've seen him, because he has a long white beard, and actually he uses that as kind of his icon.
Right.
So that is going to be, well, here are some interesting different takes on city policy, I'm sure, from those three candidates.
It's going to be a good one.
Yep. And also running, just announced, for state senator is Jim Woodward. Now, this isn't for the coming November 7th election. This would be next year. But for these statewide legislative seats, candidates tend to announce early, because this race is one that's probably going to be decided in the primary. Jim Woodward, of course, is a Republican. He's going to be running against Scott Herndon, who currently holds that seat. And this is going to be a very interesting race as well. The primary is coming up in either May or March.
Depending.
The state hasn't quite decided that yet. In fact, they're going to likely call a special session of the legislature to discuss reinstating a primary for the presidential election, because it's now, as it stands for the Republicans, is a caucus. I think that's true for Democrats, too.
Yeah, the legislation that went through the session last year or earlier this year accidentally got rid of the presidential election. So it was a straight up mistake. So they're going to need to fix it somehow. And it sounds like the Senate has the necessary votes to get that special session. Now they're working on the House.
Yeah. So that's likely going to happen just this next couple of weeks, because they have to set the primary, if they're going to change that date, by the October 1st is what I read.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an interesting race. So former Senator Woodward against current Senator Herndon. So there's probably going to be a very tightly contested race there.
Well, their last primary was explosive.
Yeah.
So this is probably going to be even more so.
And it's worth mentioning that there was more wrangling over the Bonner County Fair this week. Last Friday, the Daily Bee reported that the county commissioners had voted to dismantle the current memorandum of understanding with the Bonner County Fair Board. And then, just this week, Bonner County Clerk Michael Rosedale filed a petition for judicial review against the Fair Board because they've allegedly failed to respond to his multiple requests for public records. I don't know, are you tied in on that story, Zach?
Yeah, we've been following that as well. There's a lot of ins and outs to it, more so than we have to talk about right now.
Yeah.
But we have been working on a story about that for the last 2 weeks, so we'll have more on that later.
Yeah, and it's just, that is one of these stories that just keeps developing.
Oh, it's been about a year now, I think.
For a reporter, the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, I don't know about gift, but yeah.
So, and I have one more to mention, and that is that North Boyer has reopened to traffic. And if you travel up north of town, and for the past 2 months, it's been closed since July. It seems like it took a long time to get it done. It shifted the road about 15 feet east in order to comply with some Federal Aviation Administration safety guidelines for perimeters around the runways of the airport. And for those of us that do travel that way occasionally, it was a blessing to have that back open. And speaking of that, I this week grabbed a bit of sound from North Boyer, and I'm going to play that right now. We're trying to initiate a thing called Sounds of Sandpoint, where we're playing a short bit of sound captured around town the previous week. And we are inviting listeners to send in your own short sound clip if you want to hear it played here. And as a reminder, everybody nowadays has a phone in their pocket, which has a great recording device on it. So here is a sound clip that I captured on North Boyer, and let's see if you can identify this sound. It's kind of like the music of Sandpoint. Hold on a second. You know what? It got wiped away out of my soundboard here. Lost it. So I'm not going to be able to play that for you, unfortunately. It was such a fine piece of work, too. Actually, what it was that I was at the got stopped at the railroad crossing.
Oh, very good. That is the sound of Sandpoint.
That is the sound of Sandpoint. So I had a bit of a train sound there. So the idea is firm. Next time we will work that in earlier. And that's all that we have time for today. I want to say thanks again to our new underwriter for North Idaho News of the Week. That's Evergreen Realty. They provide access to all property listings for the MLS for Bonner, Boundary, and Kootenai counties with services for both buyers and sellers of real estate. They were established in 1984 with offices in Sandpoint and on Schweitzer Mountain. You can see more about them at evergreen-realty.com. And again, a big thanks to Evergreen Realty for their support. And Zach Hagedorn, thank you for coming in and helping shed light on some of the news of the week.
Thank you.